Hello and welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place like Ash Ketchum's Pikachu. We don't evolve, we just level up. Here with Michael Schumer from Pixel-less, the TikTok account.
Yo.
Yeah, give me a plug right away.
Yeah, give me a plug. Yep. Yeah, just started. I'm on I think I'm on my third official video with the Switch 2 discussion, and
Oh yeah.
hopefully we see a lot more Pixaloos going forward, so.
Well, I have to thank you because your Switch 2 video inspired my Switch 2 video and your overall reaction as well. We're here to talk The Last of Us, part one, part two, and the show, mostly the show. This is the premiere for the show. Season 2's coming out 4 days from now, at least 4 days of recording. We're recording this on the 9th of April. It's coming out the 13th of April. Future Days is the episode that is coming out for
Great
season two.
title. Great title for that episode.
We'll get into the title talk. But first, we're going to talk Switch 2 news. And I was going to start it in a different way, but you started talking like before we did the recording. And so this is the question I was going to give you. And I already know your answer, but like, what says fuck you, you're going to buy it anyway? More? $450 for the console price or $80 game price?
See, I don't think it's the console price that's bad. Now that I've
Yeah.
thought about it, this is what I was saying before. But I do agree there is definitely an ick factor to games being 80 because it's not actually 80. It's probably closer to 90 after you when have you ever really gone to the store and said, "Hey, I'm going to buy even on Steam." Like, "Oh, that game's $59.99." You're really paying, 65, 67, whatever. And then you start adding that to games. And then I know there was a discussion on physical cards being more expensive than not, but I think that got debunked. It's been really tough to kind of pin down Nintendo's exact logic on it. And then we had all the stuff, not to get political here, but we did have all the stuff with the tariffs, which kind of just put a complete hatchet into that discussion. And then pre-orders got stopped. And it's just been, ugh.
I did write in my outline before tariff because that like really fucks everything. So yeah, I agree with you on the more the fuck you is the $80 game price. But I will say I think the overall reaction for everybody else was $450. Like what the f I can get a PS2 at that price or a PS5 at that price.
What kind of PS2 you buy? Sorry, I couldn't resist it. Yeah, no, for real. That is like a discussion. See, now, I would say being somebody that's kind of a tech junkie myself, tech enthusiast, I get what they. I think the price is fair when you're looking at it from 120 hertz refresh rate. I mean, that's a pretty nice little screen. I think my Steam Deck gets up to. What is this? I'm looking it up here. I gotta get spec'd out here. Steam Deck OLED refresh rate. Not refurbished. Okay, so 90 hertz. So even my Steam Deck doesn't get that high. That's what I thought. I didn't think it was anything higher than that. Which it's a pretty nice, tidy amount for that. I think where the issue is, what I was talking about with you earlier off stream, was Nintendo's always kind of positioned itself as like a family account, so like the affordable. Yeah, it's like the de facto, like everybody had a GameCube, everybody had a Wii, nobody had a Wii U, but that's a different story
I had a Wii U.
altogether. You were the one and few. But it was a very like it's always been kind of like that de facto console everybody had. And you may or may not have had a P2 PS2 or an Xbox, but you probably had a GameCube, you probably had a Wii.
Oh, hold
And
up, hold up, hold up. Everyone had a PlayStation 2.
well, that's true. Okay,
It's like the
that's maybe.
most sold out console of all time. Like everyone had a PS2. But I get what you're saying. Like everyone had a Nintendo 64. It seemed like everybody had a Wii. And at this point, it seems like everyone has a Switch because that's kind of like the go-to. My whole thing is like, it just feels very fuck you, you're going to buy it anyway. And I wish, like, the $450 console price, I think I could have been like, you know what? Fine. It makes sense. It's a little bit more expensive. Things are just more expensive in general. But like, the $450 console price plus the $80 game price, that's like, to me, that's the bigger fuck you because it's just like, you know, the one time, oh, okay, I have to pay a little bit more for the console. It's a one-time price. But on top of the fact that it's like, okay, if I want to play my favorite games that are coming out on the Switch 2, I'm going to have to drop like $1,000 at some point to do it.
Yeah, I think where people are really taking the $80 price tag hard is... It's more like so I'm gonna get the bundle. I think I was telling you this off stream. I plan on picking it up. I'm gonna try to get it day one if possible. We'll see, maybe that doesn't happen for whatever reason or another. Yeah, but that's my goal, and I definitely don't mind. I mean, Mario Kart World looks cool, but I don't think Mario Kart's the kind of game you want to lead with being your $80. You want to lead with like a fucking Zelda.
Yeah,
like you need, even Pokemon, like that better be a damn good Pokemon game.
True,
but I think you got to lead, or like a 3D Mario game, like Odyssey, like something like that, where it's a console, it's a trendsetter game. Now, I do think after watching some videos of Mario Kart, I do think it'll be an excellent game, a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to trying it out. And I'm really, really hoping I can get the bundle so I don't have to pay the additional $80. But
my thought of Mario Kart World is it's cool, but it feels 20 years outdated. Like, this is like a really cool game. Like, if you would have came out during the GameCube or even like the Wii and it's like, hey, we got Mario Kart, but you can also go off world into this like Need for Speed type of thing where everything is just kind of blends into itself. I'm like, that would have been cool 20 years ago. But we just got like 96 tracks into like one. I don't remember the actual number. But Mario Kart 8 had 96 tracks. And it was just like really good, just solid Mario Kart play. I don't really need a world. Like, this is the game. Like, I want GTA 6. I want like other games to be that three, you know, RPG that off, you know, you can go wherever you want to go. Mario Kart isn't really that. So, like, it looks cool. I would totally, for $60 in a reasonable console, I'd be like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm in. But yeah, for $80, where you have to spend like $500, you can play this game. It's like, that's cool. Like, it's just, I don't know.
It leaves a sour taste in the mouth. And I think it's mostly too, like I was talking to my good friend of mine, shout out to Dakota. He and I have been gushing about the Switch 2. Because there's a lot of things I think to love about the console, but yeah, the price is honestly what hurts most. Mm-hmm. And what I kind of had discussed with him, I think the reason people are really upset by it, it's not like, okay, so I guess it's really twofold. It's because it's Mario Kart you're opening with, which, while it looks interesting, is it's like, it's kind of one of those, that's your launch title? I mean, I guess, sure. I mean, I feel like DK, that new DK game would be more of a console seller from what I've seen of it, and I don't even really play Donkey Kong, but I'm kind of interested in that. But backtracking, but then you have, I think where people are upset is that the first $70 Switch game was Tears of the Kingdom, and that only came out 2 years ago now. I don't even think it's been 3 years yet. So it's like, wow, we already had that $10 jump, and now we're having another $10 jump. And Nintendo is unfortunately one of the brands that could, quote unquote, kind of what you're saying, like, fuck you, pay me, about the whole situation. And it's like, hey, are we gonna start seeing that with other games? I know that Nintendo is kind of looking at GTA 6 as being a game like that, which we'll see. I don't know. It definitely does not set a positive trend for the gaming market, and it makes it so that it's, what's gonna happen is people are just gonna have to get more choosy about what games they play. And I think the reality is, there's a lot of things going on. Game development costs have gotten so astronomically out of control. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to catch a lot of heat for saying this, because I'm sure, you know, if anybody is in game development, they'll hate me for this. It's like, one of the benefits of something like AI, being able to go in there and start doing a lot of this grunt work, I think can help reduce the costs. But they're trying to look at it as, oh, we can't reduce the costs right now, so let's just charge more money for the game. And it's like, you really got to have a value. I mean, $70, people, there's a lot of people that really still will not pay that much for the games. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think Steam charges 70 yet. I think they still stick around 60, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's my, we kind of got off the track here for The Last of Us, but those are just some of my initial thoughts, I guess, on Switch 2. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm at the point where I'm like, if I had the economics to buy Switch 2 right away, I probably just would be like, fuck it, whatever, I'll buy it anyway. But as somebody who doesn't have that, it's just like, all right, well, fuck you guys. Like, it's a cash grab at this point. Like, you can give me the argument. I get it. It's just, it is what it is. You're cashing in. You're trying to get the most, you know, buck here.
For sure. And I think the reality is, like, I think the question where it comes down to is, will this price be enough to drive away consumers? And I can't say whether it will or not yet. At one point I would have said yes, but now I'm like, maybe not. And like, you'll always get the diehard Nintendo fans that kind of like Apple people were like, they're gonna buy. It doesn't fucking matter. The price is just,
I do get Wii U vibes.
Like, oh, I was going to say 3DS vibes, where it looks really cool, but then they announced that price and people were like, I'm good.
Ironically bought that price, but yeah.
Hey, you got all those. Did you stick around with it long enough to get all like the Metro? I think they gave like Zero Mission and Fusion as GBA games, the Ambassador.
I just bought it for X and Y.
Oh, damn.
And I had the money to do it. Not a game worth buying a whole console for. But
hey, but then then we got Sun and Moon and Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire. So I think you won out in the end.
Yeah. And then Scott dropped it like 20 dozen times when he was playing with it. Yeah. it still works, surprisingly. So
hey, those things are brick shit houses.
They definitely are. All right, let's get Last of Us.
Sure.
This is The Last of Us, this is the show premiere. This is our season 2 preview. So everything that happens, part 2 in the games, we will not talk about until a little bit later. I have a kind of a hot, spicy take that Michael already hates. And that is, I think Abby deserves happiness more than Ellie and Joel. That's my hot take. I will explain it later. For those who are like, who's Abby? You'll learn in the show. Maybe we'll see.
We probably should say nothing else other than that at this point. Yep. I'll leave it there. Yep.
All right, so we're going to talk about the show, The Last of Us, and we're not really going to go episode by episode. We're going to rank the episodes. I kind of have a rankings. I failed to prep for this show because I kept thinking this, like, I had enough time. It's been a really busy 2025. I've kind of stated it before. We're kind of in the last like stretch of the first really busy part of 2025. But April is busy as hell because we got Last of Us Part 2. We got Andor. One Beast is back. And I'm missing one. Oh, and Daredevil's still playing, which I have to do that Friday with Brandon. So really, really busy, and I did not quite watch every single episode of The Last of Us Part 1, but I have watched the show several times, and I've played the game several times. And I know, I think you're coming from the same place, that it's really fresh. Like, Season 2 is like, you haven't watched the show for a while, so everything's gonna, you're coming in with more of a fresh app, you know, mindset.
100%. I'm coming in even less prepared than you are, because I picked up my PlayStation Portal a few months ago. I was telling you about that, and I was going to play through Part 2, and then I just never did.
So, and I thought you were, because you told me you were. And I was like,
going to, and then I got distracted by something, probably a shiny object on the ground.
And then, as someone who has a memory of a goldfish, forgot about The Last of Us. And I'm behind, too. So these are my episode rankings, and I'm going to go 9 up.
All right.
So my first episode, or my number 9, this episode doesn't hold a whole lot of memory. And the next episode I have to watch. I will redo these rankings next week when we review episode 1 from season 2. Number 9, I have Ken, the Jackson episode.
I'm going to pause real quick and say this. Hard disagree. For nine.
But okay.
For nine. Yeah. I would say I'm looking at the episodes right now while we're talking, just so I can. And I already know what episode I would put dead last.
I think I already know which one you'd do from like what I remember. We'll get to it. So sure. 9, I put Ken. Just there's a lot of lore background. There's a lot of talking between characters. It's really fun from a fan of the games. But when it comes to overall, like what happens in this episode, not it, I don't remember a lot happening. And it was kind of that transition episode where, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm Joel, I'm going to ditch you, Ellie. Tommy's going to take you, but no, I changed my mind. I'm going to take you. Joel dropping a bunch of kind of these context clues of like how I feel towards Ellie. And then at the end, you know, they get into a fight and then Joel goes down.
So I'm going to, if I can interject here.
Yes.
I think I'd probably put Ken as, I don't know where I'd put it because I haven't seen the show to be able to rank it, mm-hmm. but I personally love that episode because it's one of my favorite moments from the game, and I think they did such a good job. That powerful moment of Ellie being like, fuck you, Joel, you're the only person I have in that real father, and then him breaking to Tommy That's and fair. Saying, you know what, like, I can't, she reminds me too much of, was it?
God, Sarah.
I mean, Sarah, okay. Yeah, of Sarah, and like he's like, I can't do it. He's just that terror of like, I don't even have kids myself mm-hmm. yet, but like you can see him grappling it as a father, being like, I can't put myself there again, which ultimately ends up mm-hmm. enforcing. It's like it's literally this coalescing moment of what this show, the heart of this show is. Mm-hmm. And it's a
the turning moment.
Yep, and it's a father and a daughter, and like what a parent will do to protect their child. I do know what my last episode would be, but I'll let you have a list. I do not. So I'm going to let you rock it and just kind of make my feedback.
I will redo my list because I want to watch that episode. Cause like, I do remember that it being like a great moment. And it is a turning point in the show. Like that is the moment where Joel's like, oh shit, this is my daughter. Like she is kin. So mm-hmm. I do agree in that moment, but I'm like, other than that, there wasn't much of like, I remember this episode. Like, I'm not as like excited to watch this episode as like the rest of the episodes. Number eight, I label it Bye Bye Tess. I think I'm pretty sure it's called Infected. Let me look it up real quick. Infected. This is one of those episodes where it's really cool to see the clicker. It's really cool to see that game moment. But the overall story just, I don't remember it as like, oh, damn. Like, it wasn't like that episode where when I think about the season as a whole, I often forget about this episode, except for like the moment of the clickers.
See, I would agree with that assessment, which is honestly a shame because is it Anna Torv? I forget.
She's great as Tess.
Yeah, she's. Yeah. I've. There was a show she was in I loved called Fringe. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Fantastic show.
I need to watch it.
And then she was in Mindhunter, too, and I love that show. Like, a bunch of stuff I've just really enjoyed through the years. She's always had some, or not always, but she'll seem to pop up in, and I'm like, hey, it's Anna Torv. I like that. She's like, what hell of an actress. So I would agree with that. I think that is definitely, it's not a weak episode, per se, but it's mm-hmm. definitely a, compared to just the highs of this show, it's one of the weaker episodes.
Yeah. And I say that for number nine too. I think every episode is like amazing. The next one, I think I'm pretty sure it's the one that you have at the very bottom. And I thought about putting it at the bottom, but it's like an episode that I always remember it. Like I remember this episode really, really well. And I really like the standalone story that it is. And that's Left Behind with Riley and Ellie.
Yep, that is my. I was gonna say like no. I appreciate what it is and what it was supposed mm-hmm. to be for. I think for me, with it being such a short show,
yeah,
that's where it's like, if we had to. Not that I think you can get rid of. I mean, Left Behind is one of those things that doesn't. In my mind, need to exist. It exists, and it's neat that it does, right? Mm-hmm. But like, if it never did, if all we ever knew is Ellie got bit, that was it. We could have left it there.
Yeah,
it does add some nice reinforcement to Ellie's whole arc and her terror of being alone, which is mm-hmm. a recurring theme with her character. Without saying anything more, but it's just, I think it's because of where it happens in the show and in the game.
Yeah.
Like if you've, and I've done, I don't know if you've ever played The Last of Us and played Left Behind.
I did
at
not.
That point. Oh, you have not played.
No, Left I haven't Behind actually.
So I've done it. Like I've done a story run or a run of the game where I got to the point where Joel gets the whatever rebar. I forget. It's definitely a mortal wound, by the way. I've seen people be like online, be like, "Yeah, you'd be fucking dead if that happened to you."
Yeah.
Video game logics aside, but anyways, and I was like, "Oh, I want to make this as like authentic to the experience as possible." So I stopped and played Left Behind, and I remember just being like, oh God, it's a fucking pain to get through. So I like Riley. I like Ellie. I like that it shows a lot. It's just, it's one of the episodes where I genuinely do feel like you could skip it and you really wouldn't.
I agree. I agree with that.
Miss much.
So. I just remember that episode. And I kind of took the rankings that way. Number six, I have it as the Henry and Sam episode. I did recently watch the Casey episode and the Henry and Sam episode. I really enjoyed the Henry and Sam episode. I really enjoyed getting more of that background of Sam and that change of Sam being
because there was another two of them? Or yes. Are you talking about specifically this second one?
Yeah, this is the second of the Casey episodes.
Oh, Casey. I can't say. Okay, gotcha.
And this is where, like, the clickers and we have the giant, I forget the name of the... like the
bloater.
Yeah, bloater. Why did I forget? The bloaters. Like, that was, like, a dope scene. The sniping in the game was dope. The story itself just... I didn't really like it as much as the first one. Like, the second time, or the third time I watched this show, like, I just recently watched this episode last night. I really like the first one. I like the Joel and Ellie relationship. And I have it a little bit higher on my list because of that.
Right on. I think that I would agree with that being kind of a nice, like, as much as... So I think one thing that I know a lot of fans are really hoping for more of is more clickers in season two. And I hope we get that. I really do hope we get that. Especially given how much... in my mind, I feel like there's going to have to be me. I don't want to say filler, but I just don't know how they're going to get however many episodes, whatever. We won't get too deep into that. There's a whole other discussion, but, I feel like that's really the highlight of the episode. And from what I'm seeing here, it's actually the highest ranked episode of the series on IMDb. That's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
Okay. I guess, my list is really... We'll see. I'll re-rank it next week. And number five, I have the intro Boston episode. I really like the intro part of this show. This episode, the Boston part, not as much. Not that I didn't like it, and I didn't feel like it. It definitely like needed to be a part of it because it sets the whole show up. But it definitely is like two episodes almost.
Yeah.
So that's number five. Sure. Number four, I wrote it as Salt Lake City Massacre, because that's basically what this whole episode was. It's like not the best episode. It's very straightforward. I like playing the level more than I liked the episode itself, but I thought the episode did a really good job of what it needed to do. And it's up there, so it's number four for me. Number three is this... first part of the Casey episode. I just really like the Joe and Ellie dynamic. I like just Ellie and Joel just learning to trust each other more. It's the first time they ever had to be in conflict. And it just, you get to see that bond grow. And then you get to see the comparison between Henry and Sam in the next episode, which I think is like a weaker episode, but it's still really good. We just don't get a highlight scene in the episode itself.
I can see that.
In number two, I just wrote it as David's episode. This is the one where they're in the mountains. Ellie has to fight off a bunch of cannibals. One wanting him, more or less, wants her to be his wife, more or less, which is creepy as fuck. That's number two.
Dinner.
That's the highlight of the game. Spoiler alert for favorite moments of the game. It's just one of the better stories, one of the, like, the peak moments, but it doesn't top the best episode. And the best episode is Long, Long Time, episode three with Bill and Frank. I recently just watched a show last night. I went into this episode with, like, the hater mindset. I went in there and like, you only like it because it's a gay story. You were told to like it. It's woke propaganda. Like, that's the mindset that I went into. Like, you know, like, it's not as good as you remember it. And I fucking watched it. And it's such a fucking captivating episode. And not just captivating, like, the whole Bill and Frank story is just, like, was just really well written and really well shot. But it's a great episode because it moves the plot further in a very indirect way, but it's like a really well done way. I definitely like the Bill moment in the game, and there's a part of me that misses that moment. But goddamn, I can't say that this episode wasn't beautiful. It is a 5 still, yet again, even me wanting to hate it, I can't. It's a really good fucking episode of television, and it, even though it's very much like Left Behind, it's very much kind of this frustrating, like, we want more of, like, Joel and Ellie, not just, like, these other characters. But this episode's so fucking good that I have a hard time being upset about it, because it's just a really well-told story. And the thing is, like, it's not, like, beautifully written. It's more or less written to set up Nick Offerman. I forget the other dude who plays Frank. But it just sets up this performance that Nick Offerman just fucking ate. Like, between him and the guy who played Frank, like, those two just really sold each scene, which just made this episode better. So, I don't know. That's my number one.
I don't know if it would be my number one. I think I've still got to give that. Honestly, Ken might be, now that I think about it, just because it has my favorite moment of the game, hands down. But it is a good episode. And I do think it has a more optimistic take on Bill than the game does. Yeah. The game has... True. True. I don't want to spoil it, but the game, and maybe we already did spoil it in our original podcast, but somebody's listening to this that did not. If you haven't played it, it's a great game. I would recommend it. If you get scared easily, play it on the easiest difficulty. I watched a good friend of mine play it, and he was screaming and shooting rapid fire, and he made it through it one piece. So, you know, if he can do it, I believe in you. Just turn the lights on, have a lot of caffeine. So it's, you give a little extra thrill. It's a great story. Watched the show, you know the twist. So, but I did like the overall. I mean, it was a darker ending, but it was also a very beautiful ending. And for them going on their own terms. So, and just that, it really does hammer home the theme of love.
It does. It does.
Yep. And it's just, I mean, like, there are times where I think about, like, man, this is gonna sound so macabre, but I'm like, I need to die before Haley does, because I will be a fucking wreck if I'm by myself. And that's, I'm sure everybody that's been in a relationship has probably thought the same thing. Be like, yep, I gotta go first.
It's selfish. It sounds, it's like, so a selfish way to die. Yeah, I die first. I can't handle it without you.
I'd be so screwed. So it just, yeah, not good. But it's more just because she's my person. I mean, ideally it's like who was it? There's like an old comedian that said, the perfect situation is, I think it was Chris Titus, who had a joke about how the ultimate love story is like, you're both sitting on a porch, your cataract-filled eyes, milky, look at each other, smile, and boom, your hearts explode at the same exact time, and that's it. That's the end. You know, like, hey, that's fucking true. It's not the, I mean, if you had to pick a way to go.
That's more like the Bill and Frank thing. It's like, you know what? That might be the happiest ending you can have. Like, yeah, I don't think it's a sad ending. I'm like, it's a way happier ending than the games. Like, of course, Bill's still alive in the games, but, like, Frank and Bill's end is brutal. Like, Frank is like, I'm gonna leave you because you're an asshole, and then he immediately dies. Like, doesn't even get far without him. It's just, this is a way happier ending. Like, you know, we live a full life in the apocalypse together. You're old, I'm old, let's just die. And
like that realistic thing of, like, it's Bill's not gonna go live in the city with everybody else. He's just not. He literally was a prepper because he fucking hated everybody and was like, the best thing that happened to him was the world ending for so many reasons.
He's like giddy. Like Nick Offerman giddy. Like
yeah, he's like, oh, I still love the scene where he's like going through fucking Menards and like grabbing stuff and the power goes up. And he's like, oh well. So,
well, he's anyways. Like, already? That was really quick.
So that was fast.
Okay. So you would have kid number one. Who would episode three be your number two then, or would it be David?
My episode two. God, I really need to watch the show again, but I think I would probably put three would probably be the cannibal episode. Two would probably be the Salt Lake City episode, just for the giraffe scene alone. But it's so tough because like some of these are like my favorite moments from the game. Mm-hmm. So it's like how much of that is bleeding over?
Well, let's transition to the game. So I have like a top eight of like.
Do we have anything we need to talk about for the show for anybody that's listening? No.
Favorite moments of the game. Favorite moments of the game. Part one. So this is like the compare contrast. So I just did it based on like region. Number eight, I put Boston. Just I don't remember that much of it. I just remember Joel being brutal, more or less. There was the parts in the town in the museum. Okay, maybe I'm being a little too harsh. Number seven, I put Jackson. Number six, I put the college in the hospital. Five, I put the intro. Four, I put Billstown. Three, Salt Lake. Two, Pittsburgh. And then one, Ellie in the mountains with the cannibals.
This is a weird. So you went like specifically by the regions in the game. Okay. Yeah, I thought you were saying like specific moments in the game. There's eight regions total, so
that's how I ranked them.
I'm gonna try to go off my favorite area. I'm coming into this as blind as fuck. Salt Lake City is probably number one. Just the giraffe scene just still is one that's of those cool. The most iconic moments. I remember getting chills and I'm gonna blank on his name, but the guy that does the soundtrack for The Last of Us. It's something
it's beautiful.
But like his music is just
gorgeous.
I would like fight somebody that said it was anything less than Gustavo Santaolalla. I can't fucking pronounce it. I'm sorry. Anyways, I'd probably put that moment top. I like the. Did he put the college separate?
I put the college in like the college hospital. Six.
Okay, I would probably put, well, cause I think the college would be like college / Jackson would almost be like the same.
Yeah, you could.
So in that case, I'd probably put that as number two.
Really? That's high.
Good for all the sentimental.
That's fair.
I would probably put, even though I fucking hate it, I would probably put Pittsburgh as my number three.
That's how I feel, but yeah.
It's like, I hate it, but I do. It's also like, I just always think about the hotel basement scene. Like, I remember landing down there, and every time you're just like, fuck, here we go.
That's how I feel about Rat King now. Playing part two.
You find the route to the room that you need, the key card thing. You're like, all right, you like run it a couple times. You're like, all right, because I know those fuckers are going to come out of everywhere. Everywhere. Yep. And there's nothing you can do about it, because I tried. I was like, can I just sweep them out of here before I do this? And it's all they literally spawn the second you pull on the generator. Mm-hmm. And I remember like literally just feeling my heart race the first time I played it, like, and I didn't realize what was going to happen. It just, yeah. So that, and maybe it's because I'm sadistic and I like to watch people play that. Like I've watched two people play that part and both times. It's like, I'm not going to say a damn thing. I'm just going to let you
have fun.
Hey, go turn on the generator. Race. They're like, what's happening? And you're like, oh, have fun. So
Sapphire doesn't play it, she just watches me play it, and every time like that scene comes up, I'm just like, fuck, I already know what to do. I did this so many times before, but also fuck it. Also, I'm playing part two on plus, and there's so many more like creatures in that game, and I can't imagine playing part one on plus, like playing like that specific moment with like more clickers and more bloaters, because I'd literally just be like, that would fucking suck, and that's why I do not want to do Rat King. We won't talk about that until later. But yeah, Pittsburgh is, I like Pittsburgh for the challenge. I like Pittsburgh for the, like,
it's the most gameplay heavy. Yeah. It's definitely the most gameplay heavy. After, honestly, like, in my opinion,
that and Billstown.
Hot take. Billstown is a nice lead into that. I think Pittsburgh is, like, the peak of the gameplay itself in terms of, like,
yeah.
It's not that it gets worse from there, but that's really where the game kind of gives you everything. Like, true. And the rest ends up being a lot more, like, mountains. Even, like, they're a lot shorter. Like, that's the longest, like, when you're finally out of Pittsburgh, you're like, I'm fucking so done with this area. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is just like, bam, 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 like, really rapid.
It also ends with that, like, really sad, like, memorable moment with Henry and Sam, where you're just like, oh... And you're just depressed.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, for the sake of time, let's move to most valuable character from the show. And I think there's only really one answer, but I'll kind of go eight on up. So never mind. I actually don't have a good role. I put Bill 3 for characters. Mm-hmm. He's one episode, so he's not really worth talking about, but I really do like Bill. I really like that episode. Henry and Sam get the 4 spot, and then after that, it's like Marlene, Tess, I think should be in the 5, and then it's kind of like Marlene, David. But like, really, it comes down to Joel and Ellie, who's the most valuable character. And I think for this specific season, it has to be Joel, because it's Joel's story.
I agree. It's definitely Joel's story, and we get to see Ellie's story, I think, more in season 2, part 2.
And I think there's an argument to be made that it's a 1B or 1A, 1B situation. And I would, like, if anyone who's like, no, it has to be Ellie, like, I wouldn't necessarily disagree, because I think it's that close. I think there's an argument for Ellie, but I'm like, it's 1A, 1B, but Joel's 1A.
Yep. I would agree.
And at the end of the day, it was his choice at the end. The story was about his love. And I think it's a fabulous story with a ending that, like, a lot of us are optimistically sad about.
Yep. Yep. It really does show, like, the sacrifice parents have to make for their children. And, like, it's unfortunate, though, too, because, like, Ellie's perspective, it's, like, complete destruction of her own agency.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of, like, she's in such a dark place at that point in the story. Like, well, she's not even Kate. In my mind, like, she's... I wonder, I feel like maybe Ellie stands will hate me for this, but like, I don't think she was, it's kind of like there's certain moments growing up. Like if you asked young Michael what the best thing is, I would have given you, in my opinion, the wrong answer because I just wasn't at the point in my life to be able to really think it through. And like Ellie is kind of that way where she's like, it has to mean something. And it's like, okay, but your life has to mean something and not just, my whole skepticism with the Fireflies is there is no certainty this cure would work.
Yep.
Ever.
Yep.
And that's where I'm like, no, Joel made the right decision. Like they were just, and they did not get Ellie's consent. Yeah. She might've given it to them, but they kept her drugged and threw her in. But anyway, so what do we should probably move on to season 2 here so we can,
I just want to touch on that. The whole, like, was Joel right? That's still an argument that people are making. I feel like I'm past it by a lot. And when I say I'm past it, it's just, I think Joel was right. Initially, I was like, no, Joel's wrong. Joel should have saved the world. The world matters more. But that's only if the Fireflies were right. And that's only if Ellie had a choice. We don't know if the Fireflies are right. And Ellie never had a choice. And I think that's the biggest thing. If Ellie was like, I wanted this to happen, I agree to this, and then Joel did what he did, I think it's a lot bigger of a conversation. But I don't think it really much is, because they never gave her a choice. They took that agency from her. And because of that, Joel had every right to save her, because they were murdering her.
Yep, I do think, like, even, like, and there's so much, I would love to see her, what, I would actually love to, what's his name? Neil Druckmann. I would love to, like, pin down and be like, all right, you just need to answer this definitively. Because just for the sake of the debate, of like,
or at least Craig Mazin said it.
Craig Mazin looked that up. Because in my mind, I'm like, okay, they're in this fucking sketchy ass hospital with barely any working equipment. Mm-hmm. okay, say they do get a cure, how are they going to synthesize it? Are they going to actually give it to everybody, or are they just going to give it to their allies? There's so many moral, the questions just expand upon themselves. If it's like definitive, do you save your child or save the world? I will never blame a parent for picking their child. You
Oh,
can't, like,
yeah.
how? Like, I mean, I don't even, like I said, I don't have kids or anything, but I.
I like what Craig Mazin said. I think he's like, I think all of us would like to think that we would go to that hospital and slaughter every single person for the person that we love. And I'm like, as a
Yeah.
parent, as some like, and I think like, if you ever got the opportunity to become a parent, you'll feel this too. It's like this primal rage, this primal like force of like, this is my person. I will slaughter everyone in front of me for my person. Like, you dare harm my person, I will give you the hell that I can give you. And for Joel, like, he could give you fucking hell. He can slaughter a whole, hospital full of people to save one person. Unrealistic in the real life, like real world, but really cool to see in the show, really cool to play it in the video game. It is an ultimate power trip in a sense. But like, yeah, he may have damned the world, but it makes sense. Like, she wasn't given a choice.
Yeah, and like also going with that, like I think not to beat a dead horse, but like he's seen her suffer through so much. Like how can you do like, and like yeah, and she he could tell she wasn't in a good place. Like I don't fault him at all for being like I just can't do this in good conscience. Like it doesn't even. I think it goes beyond just love. Like him viewing her as a daughter. It's like he's watched this poor little girl just go through so much tremendous loss, and she
And
deserves. She now this she deserves
parts
happiness.
oh, we're gonna segue. She
All
doesn't, Michael. She does
right,
not. I will tell you why in a little
wait,
bit.
before
Okay.
we do we have anything we need to do we have are we getting right into the spoiler talk, or do we have anything with season
I'm
two?
finishing up, sir. Let me
All
do my
right,
job.
all right,
All
all right. Yes, right. I'll take it
right.
over.
No, not some things never change. That's all right. Okay. MVV, most valuable villain. I think I have it between two. There's an argument for Marlene at three as like the ultimate season villain, but I think it's really between David or the KC Queen herself, Kathleen.
David, 100%. I don't even know how, like, I mean, I get Kathleen because her whole thing was revenge, but
I think it's David, but I really do enjoy the performance. I don't remember her name, but I
Melanie
really in
Lynskey, she's in
she
a,
was dope.
she's really good. Have you, so actually, really random segue here. If you haven't seen it, you should check out Yellow Jackets.
I heard good things
Very
about it.
good, very good fucking dark show. Very
Okay.
similar, like, if you like the darkness of The Last of Us, it's great. I would, it's some people are not a big fan of, like, the latest season's writing, but I enjoy it thoroughly. And she's in that, and she's, like, the main character. And fantastic job. Fantastic performance from Melanie Lynskey. So.
Yeah, she was excellent. I think I have David number one, but I'm like, I have to shout out Kathleen. Okay, I have questions for season two, but I don't want to start the spoiler side. So, if you do not want spoilers for season two, if you don't want any game information about part two moving forward, end it here.
Yep.
Because we're
And
going
if.
into spoilers, we're talking part two, and I have a take for Michael.
And before we do that, I think Jake and I are going to try to do an episode weekly. We'll probably have mostly spoiler-free discussion and keep it focused.
Yeah,
We'll
mostly.
probably, I'm sure we'll add like a little end section to compare to the game. But so yeah, feel free to tune in and listen to us ramble about that. We had a lot of fun doing it last season. I think it'll be even more fun this one. So.
Yeah, I'm excited for him. All right, here's my take.
All right.
Abby deserves more happiness than Ellie and Joel.
I'm going to let
And
you
this.
cook here. I'm going to counter argument, but I'm going to let you cook here.
Just hear it out before you start countering. Each character goes through a cycle of violence from both games, part one and part two. And through the cycle of violence, the same thing kind of happens. And then there was like a pew. Okay, I'll just go through it. A loved one is taken unexpectedly. And then there's a period of grief where a character does a lot of shady shit kills a lot of people, does a lot of bad things, and ultimately loses their humanity. And then this character is tasked or forced upon to protect another, or chooses to protect another person. And through that protection, they regain their humanity. For example, we have Joel loses Sarah. He spends 20 years dealing with his grief, does a lot of shady things, kills a lot of people with Tommy, with the Fireflies, moves to Boston. We see him in part one, how he's just, he brutalizes people. We see it in the season one of the show, even in the game where he's interrogating people. Straight up will just murder them. He does a lot of shady things, and it wasn't until Ellie started becoming more like a companion, more like a kin, more like a daughter, that's when he started regaining his humanity. That's when he started laughing more. That's when he started like thinking more about the future and why he ultimately wants to settle down in Jackson, when, at least in the games, it doesn't seem like he wanted that. For Ellie, she loses Joel in part two. She loses her humanity. She goes through a lot of grief. She goes through Seattle. Every person in front of her, she doesn't have a problem murdering until like later on at the end. And we see her pain going through it, but she does a lot of things where she loses her humanity. Abby, she loses her dad. She more or less does a lot of things and loses her humanity through grief. The big thing, and I think, unless there's more than I'm forgetting, the biggest thing is she kills Joel, our person. And then once she gets Lev, once she gets that person to protect Lev and Yara, she regains her humanity. She starts seeing the bigger picture. She's not just in the cycle of violence. She has something to live for. Joel has something to live for. And Ellie doesn't have that yet. We don't have that person. And really, if there's ever a part three, it has to be Ellie and somebody that she has to protect. Whether it's Dinah, whether it's Dinah's kid, whether it's Lever, it's just something. Like, that's part three. But this is why I say Abby deserves happiness more than Joel and Ellie. Because in those moments where you lose your humanity, where you lose your grief, Abby does something differently than Joel and Ellie ever did. Which is, when she's in those moments of grief, when she's in those moments of killing people, she often makes the humane decision. And I don't mean it as a like, oh yeah, she killed Joel, but she kills Joel. And her friends wanted to kill Tommy and Ellie. And there's two sides, Owen being one and Manny being the other. She makes the final call of like, no, let's not kill him. Joel, time and time again, he kills Marlene. I'm not going to let you live because you'll just come after her, kills her. Does it make the humane decision? Ellie, in part two, often, when she finds her person that she's looking for, whether it's Nora, whether it's Mel and Owen, she brutalizes Nora, tortures her, puts her in that dangerous situation, and kills her. Now, between Owen and Mel, she didn't have the intention of killing them, but because of her brutal way of going about it, the way that Joel does it, the whole picking between the two, and he brutalizes one until the other confesses, and like that brutal tactic, she tries doing that, doesn't go her way, and she ends up killing Owen and Mel and the baby. Abby, after all of this, sparing Tommy, sparing Ellie, gets another moment where she notices that like Owen, Mel, and all these people are dead because of Ellie. Someone that she spared. She ends up killing Jesse. It happened. She's not innocent. But in the moment where she could have killed Dina, and she wanted to kill Dina, because if we would go fair to fair, Abby owes Ellie some deaths. But she doesn't make the choice to kill Dina. And of course, Lev helps her. But in the end, she chose the humane decision. Now, we move forward in time. Ellie is with Dina at the farm. And what does Ellie do? She gets spared twice by Abby. She has everything that her and Dinah have ever dreamed about. A farmhouse, they have a kid, they have animals to raise. And yet she makes the choice to abandon all the things she loves to try to kill Abby.
All right. Can I... I'll let you... If you want to keep going, you can. But I have some counterpoints here.
So, like, at the end of the day, I think if we just base it off choices, Abby deserves happiness more so than Ellie. And I'm not saying that, like, either of the characters deserve happiness or none of them deserve happiness. But if we have to, like, pick and choose, and for God's picking and choosing, like, which character deserves happiness out of the three, I think Abby, just based off her decisions, deserves it. That being said, I think Ellie and debatably Joel has higher morals than Abby. I don't think Abby starts with higher morals. I don't think she's a more, she has like this like center about her that's like, do what it takes. Like, you can see that with her dad. You can see that with the wolves. Like, it's very centered to her. But at the end of the day, Abby makes a humane decision and Ellie does not.
So, okay. So here's going to be my counter argument. I get what your, I get what your thesis statement is, as it were. So my counterpoint is this. I could agree with it being, she deserves happiness more than Joel. I will give you that. I will give you, that's a gift from me to you. Pass it down. I can't agree with Ellie concept though, for a couple reasons. So let's review some stuff here. I think Ellie's perspective. Grows up orphan, does not have parents. She's literally an orphan right off the bat.
Yep.
Finally gets a tiny shred of happiness with Riley. This tiny, just a sliver of hope for a life. Ripped away instantly. Oh, and guess what? You're the proverbial chosen one. But you're not just like a chosen one that people are going to revile and or like look at you and be like, you're a hero. They're going to think you're fucking crazy and want to kill you. Okay, great. You go, you meet this like kind of quasi mother figure, or the closest thing you have to it, through Marlene, who tells you like, hey, I knew your mom. We went way back. I've been secretly protecting you. Also, I'm part of the Fireflies. We think you're the cure. Okay, she finally gets us another little bit of hope. I have a purpose in my life. I have a purpose. I can do something. Okay, maybe I can make this world better. Meets Joel. Goes through, like, you know, kind of, obviously they don't get along right away, but then she kind of starts to develop this father figure relationship with him. Okay. Then he almost dies. In the process of that, she gets captured by cannibals and is almost, I mean, we kind of left our imagination, but it's implied she would have been raped and murdered by some raped, murdered, and probably turned into a fucking steak by a crazy cannibal. Which I can't even imagine. Like, I think she's like 15 in that game. Like, I just can't even imagine the psychological trauma. So,
14, I think, but yeah.
Yeah. Just a little, like a kid, just literally a kid. And at that point, I think she's kind of like, oh, do people, I think she's kind of going through it of like, oh, do people deserve this? Well, I still want to give it to them. I still want to give them like a chance at a better world. And then once again, her choice is ripped away from her, whether like, I mean, by both the Fireflies and Joel, both of them torn asunder. And she kind of knows it, but goes along with it. Like, because she doesn't have definitive proof. We're getting deep into field. If you were still listening and you played the games, we're going to just spoil everything here. Kind of has like an estrangement from Joel, but they kind of start to get along, but she can't let it rest, and then finds out. Once again, boom, another her major, this foundational part of her, like, it's like all these truths come cascading down on her. Mm-hmm. Every choice she's had has been just ripped, 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 ripped. Every single time she tries to make a choice, it just gets taken away from her. Okay. Then she finally is like, you know what? I'm going to choose to forgive Joel. I'm going to have that. Oh, God, I'm like tearing up. This is one moment that I hate that we're going to have to wait years to witness. But because I don't know. I think we've discussed how there's going to be probably a 3-season structure to this, which I hate. I hate. Probably. I really hate. I don't like it. I don't like it. But whatever. We'll just let it be for now.
Hey, 5-act structure, man. It makes sense when you think of it through that lens.
I just, my big concern is I don't know how they're going to get the audience to want to stick out a whole season of Abby. That's the sticker. They really need to make her endearing right off the bat, even given the context of the show. Anyways.
I agree.
So that's what this really hinges on for this next 2 seasons. But anyways, finally makes a chance to hey, you know what? He's still in her mind. It's like, he's still my dad. Like, I can't, I just can't. We don't see eye to eye. I don't agree with him, but I don't want to regret this for the rest of my life. Yep. And I think a lot of people can't, I feel the same, like Ellie's probably I'm also like a huge Ellie stan myself. And like, I relate to her a lot in her relationship with Joel being as complicated as it is.
I think I know where you're going with it, and I kind of want. Is it bad that I want to cut you off?
Because let me get to it.
Okay.
All right. I got to cook here. So finally makes a choice to forgive Joel, and it's literally like there's that hidden little, not hidden, but that little dialogue early on in part 2 where she and Dina are on patrol, and Dina's like, "Hey, what are you doing tonight? Like, did you want to, basically go on a date, whatever?" And she's like, "Actually, I'm gonna go hang out with Joel." And it's like, that moment guts me when I replay the game, just knowing, I'm like, God damn it, dude.
It's not going to happen. It's not in the cards.
It can't happen. And then once again, not only does she witness him getting literally beaten to death with a golf club, she watches the light. And this is a moment I've lived through myself, watching the light fade from his eyes. And in a brutal, I watched my own dad pass away, but on top of that, it's like a brutal murder. It's not like he just had a heart attack. It wasn't a freak accident. She witnesses this person when she's finally like, okay, I'm ready to make this choice to let this go, to let this, like, to live my life, to finally live life. And I think that's where her, and then she goes on this rage quest. Like, she does make choices to go on this quest, but it's out of, It's funny because I think you can't say Abby deserves it more than Ellie because their stories are literally mirrors of each other. It's kind of they point at each other. It's like the Spider-Man meme of them pointing at each other.
But I can.
You can.
I can. No, that's why I want to cut you off, because like, here's the thing. I get your point. Ellie's a tragic character, and it's not like she doesn't deserve happiness. She doesn't deserve, like, she definitely does not deserve the tragic life that she's living. She does not deserve to be a storybook character, which is like what a storybook character is. Like, you don't want a storybook life because your life is going to be full of tragedy. But that's what Ellie is. She's a storybook character. She has tragedy, and we want happiness for her. She is a part of us. She is like our daughter because we play as Joel. We are Joel in a sense, and Ellie is, we become Ellie in part 2. And so like, for us, we want that for Ellie. But the thing is, in the game, I think even hints this itself, Ellie doesn't deserve happiness because she didn't choose it. She left. She had happiness. She had her protector. Hold on. She had everything she wanted. And you can justify it. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have a justifiable reason for leaving. I'm not saying she doesn't have a justifiable reason for going on this path of vengeance. She does. She has, I think, like, the writers did a really good job of explaining exactly why she does what she does.
I got a counterpoint here, too.
But she doesn't choose happiness. She chose pain.
But neither Abby did. Abby.
No, she did. She did.
She had that future with Owen right away. This aquarium scene is the definition of, is this not working? And she's like, I basically says, I can't. I have to get him. I have to. And then even then, Joel's, or when they meet again at the aquarium, as they've grown up a little bit more, Owen's so hesitant. And not, it's like she's not only, but I'll say it like this. She forces Owen's hand. This is why I don't think Abby deserves it and why Ellie does.
Oh, she's not a...
Ellie straight up tells Dina, you don't have to come with me. I don't
Ellie's
expect
a better
you to.
Person than Abby.
She is. So,
she's a morally just character. Ellie's a better person. Definitely more likable. Definitely from like a baseline stasis, Ellie's a better person. That being said... Ellie didn't choose happiness. Ellie chose vengeance. Abby chose happiness. She listened to Lev. She spared them twice. She spared Ellie twice.
But I think we're looking at the end of her. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm looking at this at the end of part two. Who deserves happiness? Abby does. Abby got that too. She got her fireflies. She got her wish. She got what she wanted. Ellie, she lost everything she loved because of the choice she made.
So
and
I don't
the game disagree. Points it.
I would say though the game also does the same thing. We're meeting Abby, or I think at the end of the game we're seeing Abby's like kind of like her big arc, and I'm curious if part three's got to come out at some point, and I'm so curious if she'll be
Star's
a character
got a
in
line.
It. It's gotta. They've basically said as much with that documentary a few months ago. But anyways,
you have to.
There's no way. It's too much. Even just from a logistical standpoint. They would be, I don't think any leadership, even if Neil Druckmann said, I don't want to, Naughty Dog leadership would be like, fuck you, there's too much money in this shit. I don't give two flying shits what you want to do. Anyways, but I think Ellie, where we find her at the end of part two, is where Abby was at the hotel confrontation, at the end of that moment. She's right there. She's choosing to let go and move on with her life. And that's why I don't think you can really say like, because it's like it's like she's just right behind her in the race. Like,
yeah,
if you're saying at that specific moment, then sure. But also like
two
Ellie,
different things.
Ellie saved her from fucking slavery, brother. Slavery and death. She was literally like, Ellie was like,
to kill
and,
her.
I mean, to be fair, she was really like, her. I don't want to beat your ass so bad.
Like, and here's here's my last point too, and I forgot to make this point. Ellie did make the humane choice at the end. She did let Abby go with Lev. She did make the humane choice. You're right. She ended there, but she made the choice at the last possible opportunity. Abby did it first time. Then she did it twice.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I think the beef was a little different at both times.
You're trying to justify it because you love,
yes,
I love Ellie.
I love Ellie.
Because you were Joel.
Girl.
You were Joel, right?
But I don't even know if I would say it's the Joel. I think Ellie's just a character. I've always loved tragic characters. Mm-hmm. But I think Ellie specifically herself, this fucking little kid, like this gets so shafted over. It's literally like she's like the MCU, she's like Spider-Man to The Last of Us. It's like, oh, you have happiness? Fuck you.
That's fair. And Peter Parker doesn't deserve happiness either. And I think there's a complete argument for that. I think he makes some really stupid choices. He's a tragic character by one block and also by choice.
Yeah.
So is Ellie. So I agree that like at the end of part three, this might be a whole different take and this might not even like, and I don't think Ellie doesn't, like, I think, I'm not arguing she doesn't deserve happiness. I want happiness for Ellie, but she made the choice at the end that was against happiness.
Well,
we can justify it. She can, you know, like, she has the trauma. She didn't know what to do with that trauma. And I know that, like, at the end of the day, like, Ellie isn't as further along as Abby was, but Abby always made a humane choice. And, like, the way I look at it, I'm like, if we had to pick and choose just based on decisions, Abby's more humane than Ellie, but Ellie's more morally righous or morally in the right. It's a weird complex. Love the writing.
Let me phrase it like this. Let's give a hypothetical here. And like, obviously this is a hypothetical because I get what you're trying to say. And it is ultimately still a moral question, but I don't think they're any real different from each other. Because you talk about how Ellie like chooses to brutalize people. I think if Abby ran into Ellie first, she didn't run into Joel. She ran into Ellie first, and she just happened to mention, "Oh yeah, let's just say hypothetical situation." Mm-hmm. She's like, "How did you end up in Jackson?" Well, she probably would have a tough time explaining Joel, but like
she would torture Joel. Ellie.
She would have done everything, and that's why I'm like, it's so hard for me. Like, I guess I can't. I just can't. I could see what you're saying. They deserve happiness on an equal level, but I can't say Abby deserves it more. The argument I could see you making is that the game premise really wants you to like, really wants you not to hate Abby, and I still think they just kind of.
I am an Abby stan. I she's a piece of shit person. Like initially, she's a piece of shit. But like she's Jamie Lannister. She grows and like she becomes a hero. Like that's like the thing about like I really like the writing of the show, because like it is a cycle of violence. Like Joel is a piece of shit until we see him, right? Until we become him, and then he finds his protector and he gains his humanity. We love Joel because of that growth. Abby, we didn't love that growth because we fucking hated her for killing Joel, but she had that same growth that Joel had, which is like why I fucking love this game, because it's such a complex empathy test that most people fail. And I'm not saying you failing it, I'm just saying it's just a fun thing to study because it makes you feel so many different ways. Like you're really like, fuck you, Abby, I fucking hate you. And then you have the fucking player. And it's just, and it's very jarring. Part two is a jarring, like, when it goes from day three Ellie to day one Abby, it hurts. Like, the game itself should tell you, take a fucking break, because you will not enjoy this unless you do. And I did. I took, like, a couple days, and I played Abby again, and I fucking was enjoying it, because, like, it's a cool, like, flip of perspective.
Yeah.
And it puts everything in context. But the problem is most average Americans do not have the skill to do that. And they fucking hate the game because of it. So like you're forcing me to play something I hate.
But I'm going like to counterpoint game on one thing here. I don't want to say most average Americans because the show hasn't come out yet. And for all we know, TV audiences react much more positively to it. But probably. I do think most gamer audiences have.
Yes.
But I think that's a culture of gaming in general. Basically, you always are like, how often do games say, hey, how do you think Bowser feels? They're like, they're not. They're just like, kick his ass. And you're like, yeah. So I don't think it's like a bad, I think it's a tough, it's very, like the game's coming at it. I like what it's, I agree with you. Cause I think it is ultimately like a, can you forgive somebody that's trying to do the best? And like, ultimately, I don't think I could forgive Abby.
Can you put yourself in their shoes and understand their perspective and like forgive them?
And, like, I personally can't really forgive Abby, but that's mostly, I have a lot of problems with her, like, outside of, like, she literally slept with her friends, she slept with her ex-boyfriend / friend's baby daddy, and he was kind of like,
anyway.
Yeah, that was, like, Owen's my favorite character, but goddamn it, don't say it.
I do like Owen. I do like Owen.
Owen watching Owen die again is gonna destroy me, dude. It really is.
I recently watched it, and I will say this: Owen, I wouldn't say he deserved to die, but like his actions led to both their deaths.
Yeah, he did. He
fucked up.
Mel was literally like, "Just fucking tell her, like she's got a gun."
And he chose like, love.
Yeah,
chose love, and got killed for it, and then got his other love killed because of his love. His love for Abby killed Mel, which is.
God, really I love, fucked up.
I fucking love the tragedy aspect of this game. It is literally a five act tragedy, and if you like compare traditional five act tragedies to like other five act tragedies, like this game is fucking brilliant.
The problem is no one
understands this. We're so used to act three structures, and it's like, what is this pacing? It's like. If you take an intermission from day from Ellie and Abby, like the game's pacing is actually pretty fine. If you could somehow split it to two games, like it's fine. But like that's jarring.
I think I'm really curious how they're going to end up doing this with the show. Like I said, my number one. Honestly, let's end it here. Yeah, I was going to say final thoughts here. I think the number one sell for the season two, they have to get you in at least interested in Abby. And I do think the other way they could do it is if they intersparse them a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Like, they don't have to have full episodes. They could have, like, it could be like 75% Ellie, but still you got to throw a little Abby sequences in there. And then likewise, I think you got to do that for Ellie.
From what I hear, from what I gather, I don't want to go it too deep into reviews. I didn't go that deep myself because I just wanted a general sense of how everyone feels rather than like what actually happened. It sounds like we get a different take on Abby, and it sounds like we get like her side of things way early on.
That would be at least a more compelling sell, because like for me, if they had opened the game, I understand why they didn't, because it's a,
I think I they're making Neil her more likable.
That's good. And I think Neil Druckmann, I love this, and I like what Neil's going for, but I do think he kind of has that like artistic of I want to be different. It's like, okay, buddy, but you don't. Maybe you don't need to do that, and like maybe that's worse for the story than it isn't. And like,
I think it's brilliant.
I mean, in hindsight, I like it, but it's a big ask for an audience, and especially with how loved Ellie and Abby were. It's like, this is maybe a. I probably wouldn't have done it with these characters specifically.
Nah, fuck it. I love that he went with it because I think because we didn't get a happy ending from part one. Like it was like that like optimistic like we got what we wanted, but what the fuck was that, Joel? You know, like with the lying and stuff. But like part two is just like, you know, it's a tragedy. This isn't. This was never going to be a happy ending story. If it was, Ellie would have saved the day and everybody would be cured of zombies. This is a tragedy. It always was a tragedy.
I really hope like that part three is not. I would like them to be some, like, it doesn't have to be like Disney levels of, oh my God, and then they sing a song and then it's happened. But I would like Ellie at least to get some measure of true peace, and like, she deserves, like, for all the shit she's been through, that girl deserves a fucking Long Island tea, sitting on a fucking Miami beach, getting all the babes that she wants.
I don't think it ends well for her. I think she dies giving up her life and making that choice.
But that seems like such an antithesis to the whole series of like Joel begging her to live for herself and stop being like a hero to everybody. Like, and she does like, that's how, as Ellie's whole thing is like, she's always kind of been like the, oh, we can help them, we can do it.
Or hold on. Actually, never mind. I changed my mind. This is how it's going to end. She's going to give the choice to save the world, but she chooses no because she wants to live her own life because she needs to protect somebody else.
That would be an interesting take. I wonder how people would react to that. And like, also, I think it also depends on if your opinion, if humanity deserves to be saved, or if it's like, this is the new world order. Like,
yeah,
and we just have to adjust. And like, cause like you look at Jackson and they're doing okay. Like they're not bad.
They're the only ones. Not like the everybody only... else.
I wouldn't say there. I'm sure there's others, but they're definitely rare.
They're even the only ones that we've seen.
Like I would argue, even the WLF and the Scars, the only thing that causes them problem is their conflict with each other. Otherwise, they're both kind of doing their own. Like if you look at their societies as like isolated and they don't interact, like the WLF Stadium, you're like, when I first walked out there, I was like, this shit's tight as fuck. They made this whole place like this is awesome.
Here's my putting in politics. America is great if you ignore all the wars. I mean, not so much now. It was 20 years ago. America is amazing. It's great. It's so wonderful if you ignore the wars. Yeah. If you ignore all the tragedies from the wars that we cause, America is great. And that's kind of how I feel about the wolves and like the Seraphites. You know, like if you go into their like villages or their areas, a lot of humanity, a lot of like cool things, a lot of like, yeah, I'm feeling this. But then you see, you know, Isaac fucking murdering people as the leader of the wolves, like enjoying it too, and literally,
dude, more I'm or less, so I forget the name of that actor, but I'm so fucking jacked they got him for the actual show. I gotta look at
Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright. I loved him in Westworld. He's just such good. He's good. Sorry, I know you're talking. I just wanted to mention mad props to Jeffrey Wright. He's my boy. Him and Yeah.
We needed to see more Isaac in part two because he's such an interesting character.
Dude, I heard there was like a whole arc with him being more of a father figure to Abby, and like him, like that would have been like a whole big thing of like him, her turning on her father to be like, no, this isn't right what you're doing. So, which could make her more endearing, which in the scene, so we'll see.
So, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I literally lost my train of thought. Real quick, what are some moments that you're excited for? Just weighing them out.
Let me think. I think if I'm just going from Ellie's side, the Jackson dance.
Mm-hmm.
God, I wish we had seen that last conversation with her and Joel, but that's probably not good. That's definitely end of season three. That's there, or season four. I mean, so I can't count that, which kicks me in the nuts.
We'll see.
I don't think that it's just too narratively where it is. Like if you move it anywhere else, it's gonna instantly lose all impact of that moment for sparing.
It's fair.
Anyways, but I think I gotta think here. You go first. I'm sure I'll think of something.
Life in Jackson in general. Finding Eugene's stash would be fun. I'm actually looking forward to the Joel's death. Not that I want him to die, but I'm excited to see how they go about it and how cinematically beautiful the tragedy it is. Ellie and Dina.
I'm going to interrupt real quick. I just have a question on that. Do you think that's episode two or episode one?
Episode one.
You think so? Okay. Sorry, keep going.
Also, I know a little bit, like, episode one is going to be a Game of Thrones, like, infection rather than, like, it's going to be more towards the camp itself rather than, like, out in the outskirts. I don't know. That's what I heard. That's what I heard. So, Joel's death, Ellie and Dina are exploring Seattle, just, like, the moments of, like, playing the guitar, other things like that, I think would be really cool. The one thing I'm really, really want to see, and I almost want a whole episode, and I think it might be episode three. The reason why I'm saying episode three, because the guy who is directing episode three this season is the same guy who is directed episode long, long time.
What's in also episode three?
And I really hope it's the Joel and Ellie explore the science museum.
Oh, my
I hope
God, that's, dude, that's I, gonna, I forgot. That's probably my I, favorite moment of the entire...
I want it to be one episode, and I really hope episode three is that episode. Like, I just really want to see that. Because, like, that episode's one of the best episodes of TV I've ever watched, and so I'm happy that he's coming back. And I'm like, I just want it to be a personal story that's, like, not the main plot. And, like, that would be the perfect background.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, if we're moving more in the future, I really want to see like the Abbey Aquarium with Owen. I really want to see like the Wolf's way of life as well as the Seraphite's way of life. I'm really looking forward to just seeing that and just getting more lore based on the two factions. I'm really excited for Rat King. I'm not excited to play it again because I'm coming up to that part. But I'm excited to see, that's probably season three, honestly, but I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to see Ellie rafting through the city with like all the rapids and just seeing how the water just splits everything in Seattle. Dude, you've been to Seattle, I've been to Seattle.
I'm so curious how they're going to do it because such a cool fucking city to go to. And I love that it's basically just this untamed wild in the game. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it. And last little bit, best character to play between the three, Ellie, Abby, and Joel.
I love Ellie, honestly, but I love her. Well, I'll say one reason. What's the fucking, their fucking shiv, her permanent shiv, always instant, like never have to worry about clickers, baby. Oh, this clicker, you're dead. There's a clicker, you're dead. Joel and Abby, fucking plebeians. Why don't you guys carry around pocket knives? Come on, guys. What the fuck?
That's fair.
She's the only person that was smart enough to be like, maybe I should keep using this fucking thing. Nobody else thought, I should just have one of those always.
I I have Joel 3 in this ranking.
I agree actually with that.
That's just because, like, gameplay-wise, Part 2 is so much better, and we don't get Joel in Part 2. So Joel's number 3. Abby's number 2. I enjoy playing Abby because I really enjoy this, the physicality. It's like playing Joel again. And honestly, every time I play her, I'm like, look at me, I'm beefcake, and then I just, like, crush a fucking clicker or something. Like, it's like... going from Ellie where you're, like, sneaking around and you're, you know, being very smart and creative, and then you just switch to Abby where you literally have to change your whole way of playing because Abby's so much better if you just go straight forward. Like, I'm going to just fucking kill as much shit as I possibly can because I'm a fucking beefcake who's going to just punch shit. And, like, it's kind of fun to play that character, but I will say after, like, a few hours of, you know, playing that overpowered character, I really do miss Ellie, and Ellie's number one.
Yeah. I'm hard to agree.
I like the rogue play, and that is what Ellie is. Abby's a paladin, if we're going D&D class.
So would Joel just be like a generic warrior then?
Barbarian.
Okay.
Fighter, maybe, with the gun. I don't know. He reminds me of a barbarian because he has those moments where he just blocks out, especially in the Salt Lake Massacre. He just blocks out, and he just fucking kills. So that's very barbarian. Abby just feels like a paladin where, like, it feels like she has a greater purpose, but she's often lost, especially with the wolves. Firefly is a little bit different. Like, there's a little bit of, like, righteousness to her. And then Ellie's just rogue. Like, she just has the rogue gameplay. She's sneaky. She's agile. She's a lot of different, like, weapons. Just more of a rogue play.
And man. Right.
So, yeah, that is, you got my hot take. I think it's a solid argument if you just base it off decisions. We kind of skipped through a lot more than I wanted to talk to but you know what?
Yeah, we got 7 weeks, baby. We got seven weeks.
Ooh, every Wednesday. All right. Well, I think I'm going to be releasing all these episodes trying to do Thursday morning, if not the weekend, along with Daredevil and maybe some other. So... yeah, I will release them as soon as we record them, at least the next day. And yeah, thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
All right, this was Michael Schumer and your host, Jake Sherbing, signing off, talking Last of Us Season 2 premiere.
Peace out.